Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hello, hello.
Hey, hey, hey. Now we're on the air. It's a Monday.
Is it happy, Monday again?
It's happy Monday, Molly. Right. How you doing?
There you go. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, good. Did you have a good weekend?
I sure did.
Great. Yeah. Good. Good. I'm excited. We're going to see some friends tonight.
Don't pump me for any information.
What's that?
Don't pump me for any information.
Oh, so what did you do this weekend?
I had a good time.
Well, glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. So, hey, this evening we're going to get to see some friends from Normandy, a family that was just really a great host to us in Normandy. And so I made a couple of apple pies. I made French apple pies.
I don't know. See, I was thinking I was going to make something French, and I'm like, why would I take something French that I'm not going to be as good at making for French people who are really good at making it? So I didn't go there. Good for you. I'm sure that that shows your courage, Kimmy. Good luck.
So where are you dropping by to, what grocery store are you dropping by to pick something up, Molly?
I actually made spicy pork tacos in the crock pot.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. There you go.
Okay. You're sure you didn't go to the store and take it and put it in the crock pot and now you're taking it?
I would never take your move, Kim. I'm so real. I got to keep it real. But great. Yeah. And so when we were in France, we got to visit their house, and in the backyard, you know, they found it was a part of an American bomb that had not gone off. Is that correct? Or it was a part? Actually, I guess it had gone off. This is just a part of it.
It was a mortar. That was actually the second family that we went with.
This is them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then I mixed up.
Yeah, we probably don't need to talk about this on the air. But
yeah,
anyway,
okay.
But it's exciting to get to see them because they love our veterans, and they've done so much to invite veterans to their home, to honor them and say thank you so much for all you did to liberate France during World War II. So, and it's awesome that there are still people that care about that today.
So yeah, it was just a few years ago as part of a mortar shell, and their son found it in the backyard.
Yeah, and they're still finding them in all over France today. Mm-hmm. They still have them.
Yeah, so they had to call in the authorities and kind of quarantine the area till they got that taken care of.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what's on your radar, Molly?
Well, I'll tell you what, Ponzi schemes are on my radar, but we're going to get to that in the second segment. We're going to talk about PARA, and we'll have Joshua Scharf in studio with us, and our state treasurer, Walker Stapleton, is going to call in regarding that as well, because there's a big Ponzi scheme, and they are illegal and immoral, and we want to make sure that we are taking care of people, and the government isn't lying to them and hurting their ability to live free and prosper. But for now, I want to talk about healthcare. I know it's like,
again,
beating a dead horse, but I'm really happy that at the tweet I saw today from President Donald Trump, he definitely is proving that he is smarter than big government elite on the right and the left, because apparently none of them want to get rid of Obamacare. And, you know, you wonder why do they not care? They don't, you know, they promised they were going to get rid of Obamacare so that we, the people, had choice and had lower prices and had more better access to doctors and health care. But now they're not doing it. And you're like, why is that? Because do they not care? But the problem, Kimmy, is that Congress doesn't have any skin in the game. And Donald Trump just pointed that out. And basically said, you know, under Obamacare, Obama carved out a little specialty for Congress and their staff, saying that they wouldn't have to eat those terrible raviolis out of a can. They get to keep on eating lobster and give us the crud. And so if you didn't know that, you know, Congress, they don't have to pay the same premiums that we do for health care.
The founders said that is not right. They knew that if you got to a government that treated the individuals differently than they treated themselves, then we are in a whole mess of trouble.
Yeah. And remember when Obamacare first came out, there were so many carve-outs, a lot specifically in Nancy Pelosi's area. She got a lot of nice carve-outs for her friends in California. And so the fact that he says, you know what, we're going to make everybody feel that burn in Congress, just like the little people, you know. And when you feel that burn, you'll get rid of Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And so you know, some of the guys are coming back saying he's threatening us to pass a bill. Well, yeah, good. I'm glad, because we've got to get some fire lit under these guys to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when they passed Obamacare, they said that the average family, I believe, was going to be saving like $2,400 a year, I think, in premiums.
They didn't tell the truth.
And obviously, and that you could keep your doctor, right?
They
nothing
didn't tell
would
the
change.
Truth.
And the exact opposite took place. And, you know, I've seen floating around Facebook today, Kim, this 28th Amendment idea, this whole proposal idea that says Congress shall make no law that applies to the people that doesn't apply to them. And I mean, that's just common
sense. It is common sense.
I can't even imagine, you know, I guess our founding fathers didn't put that in there because they didn't think that anybody would be so uppity that they would just give themselves, they treat themselves like kings. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the whole point of the three separate branches of government. So none of them got too big. So why did our executive and our Congress come together and say, oh yeah, let's give them all this cruddy plan and raise their prices. And then, oh, but let's give bailouts to the insurance companies and let's give bailouts to this group in this group and to Congress, but make the people suffer. Government solutions hurt. Mm-hmm. What's the answer? Get the government out of healthcare altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And until then, make them feel the pain we're feeling.
I totally agree. Make if everybody has skin in the game, they make better decisions. I just realized we didn't even say who we are.
We're the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and I am Molly.
And I'm Kim. And you can check out our website, AmeriChicks.com. If you want to call in today, because I think you may have some questions or some comments, the number is 303-632-4160. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We're on KDMT 1690 AM, Denver's Money Talk. And we will be talking about money, in particular, pension money, para money. Starting in this next segment. So, you know, we need to do a little housekeeping.
Well, we sure will. And it's important because what we talk about on the AmeriChicks here is we look at public policy and we want to dig in deep and say, you know, they say that this is going to be the best for everybody, but let's look long term. How is this really going to affect mom and pop, small people, regular people, non-political elite, non-politicians, non-bureaucrats? How is this going to affect the rest of us? And you know what, Kim? The reason we need to do that is because, A, once these guys get elected into government, apparently they get into the fishbowl, mm-hmm. and they don't see what's going on. They're not representative of the people anymore, and that is being proved right here. But number two, the fact that I don't think I realized, Kim, until recently, until the past few years, that Congress does pass bills that doesn't apply to them, only us.
Well, it happens
at city, elitism.
Yeah, city council. It happens at the state. And Molly, we are the sluice for truth. You know, we look at issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And we're working to educate, inspire, and engage. And one of the things that we are is lobbyists for the little guy.
Stick with us. We'll be right back.
At you for a few key years back at the beginning of the 2000s, the state legislature didn't make all of the payments that it should have been making. Now, it made everything that it was statutorily required to make, but it didn't make all the it didn't make the annual required contribution to keep that to keep things fully funded.
So somebody says why?
One. Well, because it was a bad year. Remember, we had a recession, and so they needed to find the money for someplace, and so they decided to kick the can down the road. There was also a fairly substantial what's called a fire sale on the purchase service credit. So to take just a second to explain what that means is if you were eligible after a certain number of years and at a certain age for a full pension and you decide that you want to retire a little bit earlier, you can buy years of service credit to make it as though you had worked those years. Now, PERA requires you to buy the full actuarially amount. So basically it lets you retire early, but you're not getting any money out of it. At the behest of then Governor Bill Owens, the board decided to basically sell this off at a very heavily discounted. So you could buy, and these are about right. It's hard to tell exactly what the numbers are, but you could buy about a dollar's worth of benefits for somewhere between 25 and 30 cents on the dollar, which meant that you had these long-term obligations. There was a bunch of money coming in today, but at the cost of an increase of the long-term obligations. Mm-hmm. Those are two of the big issues, two of the big reasons that that we're in this thing now. We also increased benefits in the late 90s when we probably shouldn't have. Everybody thought things were going well and the dollar amounts were a lot smaller. We increased benefits then. And then we also, as I say, have this issue of how big do you actually value this thing? And so we've let it get away from us. We've let this problem look smaller than it is. And so people haven't acted until now.
Well, Joshua Scharf with the Independence Institute, your policy analyst, who wasn't somebody watching this?
Sure. I mean, people every few years or so, you know, when we have one of these problems, people do stuff. So we had the bad years in the market. That's another reason we're underfunded, is that They were assuming high rates of return, up to 8.5% in the early part of that year, in the early part of the century. Now they're down to 7.25%. But if you make decisions based on this idea that you're going to be getting 8.5%, and then you don't get that, you're going to find yourself underfunded. So in 2004, after a couple bad years in the market, they decided to increase the employer, that is taxpayer, contributions. In 2006...
Because these are public employees.
Right.
And it is
right.
The taxpayer who pays those salaries. So the taxpayer is paying for this additional influx of money.
Now, did we vote to do that? We the people, because that's an increase of taxes?
No, it's not an increase of taxes. It's an increase in obligation that has to be paid. So the money has to come from someplace. Then if the money isn't there for something else and they have to raise taxes, then you get to vote on that. But this was a legislative decision. Then in 2006, they did something similar, again, increased the employer contributions gradually, and those are still going up. By the time they're done, it's going to be over 20% of a person's salary. There'll be an additional. So if you're making a dollar, then you put in 8 cents, and the employer, the state, or the school district puts in 20 cents. Okay.
Wow.
So, that's a lot more than I was getting from my employers working in a defined contribution plan, like a 401k, which is what most people would know that as. I mean, the majority of the money going into my account was my money, not the employer's money. And if it were the employer's money, that would have been a private business. So you're saying that we taxpayers are paying more towards these people's retirement than they're putting in themselves.
It's about a 2.5-to-1 match, right?
Well, how is that fair?
Well, and Joshua, Social Security, I'm trying to remember what that, because there's an employer contribution to that. I'm thinking it's 6.5%.
I think that's even, though. You put in and then the employer puts in the same amount.
So it's a total of 13%.
Right. I think that's about right.
I think that's about right. Last time I looked, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is. And for in terms of solutions, it's going to be very, very difficult to persuade employers, to persuade school boards or the legislature at this point to increase that number. So which is fine. It shouldn't increase at this point, but it's going to be a hard sell. So they're going to have to find some other way of doing this.
So you said, Joshua Scharf, you said they said we have about 58 cents available for every dollar promised, but really that's about 34 cents promised. If we don't do anything, at what point do retirees of PARA stop getting payment?
Well, that's a hard thing to say, but according to their own projections, about 30 years from now, each the school and the state fund, again, very large funds, we're talking in terms of what they admit to unfunded liabilities. Overall, PARA has about a $32 billion B with a $1 billion unfunded liability. Right. So in about 30 years or so, according to their own projections, their own actuarial and investment projections, if they make every year what they're supposed to make, 7.25%, they will be under 20% funded. All right. That's like one bad market move away from not being able to make payments.
Well, and 7.25% is a pretty significant rate of return in this particular market, I think. I mean, there is some risk that there is a PARA board that makes this decision, right?
Well,
the investment decisions.
Right. They understand that this is an expected rate of return. So this is their sort of measurement of reality. And it doesn't actually, 7.25% doesn't have, I mean, it doesn't affect what they actually get. It affects what they're trying to get. It affects how they measure where
their
they are. It's a measurement of reality. So the 7.25%, by the way, is still, even though it's down from the 8.5%, is higher than, for instance, Warren Buffett expects on his pension, not his personal pension, but that he has for his company at about 6%.
Joshua, let's hold that thought. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about PARA. Pretty important information regarding the Public Employees Retirement Association. We are with Joshua Scharf, policy analyst with the Independence Institute. We'll be right back for the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, July 28th, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include The Emoji Movie, Valerian, and Spider-Man Homecoming. Admission is $8 per person and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. Please be sure to visit the delicious snack bar to help 88 Drive-In Theater continue to bring you the best in movie entertainment. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Stay up to date on movie showings and times at 88drivein.net. And be sure to tell them, The AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. Yes, we are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. I'm Kim Munson.
I'm Molly Vogt.
We have Joshua Scharf in studio with us. He is a policy analyst with Independence Institute. He works a lot with the numbers of PARA, which is the Public Employees Retirement Association. And this is something that I think is really going to be on people's mind because it affects a lot of people. And during the break, Joshua, you said that the teachers' portion of PARA has a 44% chance of going bankrupt, right, or running out of money. And then the state component for the other employees has a 38% chance. That's pretty significant. That's got to scare people a lot.
It is. And that's part of the reason that that's the main reason that PARA embarked on this listening tour that they went on. They really got scared by those numbers.
Okay. Well, we have Walker Stapleton on the line with us. He is the state treasurer for Colorado. And Walker, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be on.
Okay.
Hi, Joshua.
How are you doing, Walker?
Walker, you've been watching this for a number of years. And in fact, I kind of remember some kind of a dust up because don't you sit on the board of PARA?
Well, there have been a lot of dust ups over the years involving PARA. And I have to say, I certainly appreciate Joshua. He's been one of the largest and leading voices for reform other than myself in elected office in the state of Colorado. And at times it's been a lonely crusade because it's really a battle of haves versus have-nots. And this is the largest debt that we have in state government right now. Under the new accounting rules, which I won't get into the specifics of because it's a little wonky, but under the new Government Accounting Standard Board regulations, PARA's unfunded liability is now more than $50 billion. That's our budget is $28 billion in Colorado, so that's a figure that's almost twice what our budget is in Colorado. Because of revising their financial expectations, the unfunded liability of PARA has gone up by more than $1 billion every year I've been in office. I'm entering my seventh year in office. And it's not a question of if, but when Greg Smith has to go back to the legislature with his tail between his legs and ask for more money for an insolvent system. Because when I first took office, PARA had an 8% rate of return. They changed that twice now, first to 7.5 and now to 7.25. And there's no magic bullet to fix this. More money is required. And more often than not, unfortunately, that's taxpayer money. And all of us, whether we like it or not, are investors of last resort in the fate of Colorado's pension system. And that's why it's incumbent upon the system to proactively take the steps necessary to fix itself before it wreaks havoc on school budgets and city budgets all across Colorado, as we've seen in other cities and other states in the country.
You know, Walker, it's Kim here, and I was talking to a friend of mine the other day about this, and there's been kind of this talk that there is this responsibility of the taxpayer to make sure that PARA is whole. And but many people lost, you know, in defined contribution plans, and there's hardly any defined benefit plans in the private sector anymore. You know, many of us have risk in the market if our retirement goes down. We've got to figure it out. So it's almost like to me like it's unfair that we are over here trying to create business and we're paying taxes and we're paying PARA. And that there's been decisions that have been made over here with a liability that is significant. It seems like there needs to be some skin in the game across the board to me.
Well, absolutely. And there's a couple things with respect to that. First of all, PARA doesn't even provide the opportunity for school teachers to choose between a defined benefit or a defined contribution plan. Whether you like it or not, you have to go in the defined benefit plan, and that's because they need to keep growing the inputs to pay for the cost of benefits out the back end of the system. And that's why, a lot of people say, well, you know, we don't have a choice, and we're a member of the defined benefit plan. And if you find out that you're hogtied to the Titanic, you don't have a choice, because the idea that you get 100 cents on the dollar is going to be constitutionally protected. If you look what bankruptcy courts have done in Detroit, what they likely will be doing in Chicago, Illinois, and what they're starting to do around the country is when they're restructuring obligations, you know, just because a public pension is in the Constitution doesn't mean that it's going to end up getting 100 cents on the dollar. You may end up getting 15 cents on the dollar and have to stand in line with other creditors when insolvency occurs. So this idea is a fallacy that just because on paper you're going to get 100 cents on the dollar, that's what you're going to get in your retirement. furthermore, the idea that you're going to get, you know, absolutely every dime that's promised to you, you know, it just isn't the case when a bankruptcy plays out. And there are steps that need to be taken. One of the biggest misnomers that is, you know, been used against me time and time again in terms of propaganda from the system has been that I'm trying to take away, you know, Steve and Betty's retirement. And Betty was a school teacher for 25 years and Steve worked for, you know, the city of Aurora for 30 years. And nothing could be further from the truth, because if you're trying to enact reform in this system, it is ineffective to react to enact reform on people that have been in the system for 30 years. Number one, that would be litigated until the cows come home. And number two, it's not an efficient way to achieve reform. But reform has to happen with newer and younger members in the system. And there are tons of things that the system can do to help put itself on a path towards greater solvency. Right now, school teachers in Colorado retire at 58. Everybody else at 60. You know, that's not even close to being in line with Social Security. Jerry Brown, the governor of California, not exactly a conservative, says public workers now need to work till the age of 70. I think if you wanted to talk to a young person in their 20s who wanted to be a public school teacher and tell them, hey, you're going to have to work a couple years extra, but in exchange, you're going to have a retirement system that you can actually depend on, that's not a false promise on a piece of paper, I think that they would say, I'm all for it.
Well, Mr. Stapleton, sorry, this is Molly here. Thanks so much. And as state treasurer, obviously, you're dealing with money all the time, and you've got kind of some insights to see what's there versus the rest of us. I'm wondering, you know, if when you say that if we ask the younger people if they would be willing to work a few more years and they're going to be able to control their own outcome, are you talking about because now these younger people are going to have the opportunity for a defined contribution plan? Or do you mean they're going to get into a defined benefit plan and because we're increasing retirement age, they'll have more time to make it up?
Defined benefit plans are, as Joshua would agree with me, are really, you know, of the dinosaur age. They're no longer largely in existence in the private sector. They shouldn't be in existence anymore in the public sector. And the reason that they're no longer in existence in the private sector is obviously, if you look at, you know, United Airlines, General Motors, the list goes on and on. They're retirement plans that are too ineffective, too expensive, and cannot be properly administered. So a lot of states have gone into hybrid plans, which have given people the option to switch to a defined contribution plan or pay more for the defined benefit plan they're in. But eventually, you can't just flip a switch and say to everybody, hey, you all have to join a defined contribution plan, because then we have to make up the unfunded liability. And, you know, we have Herculean fights down at the state capitol about how to fill $150 million holes in the budget. The idea of actually filling a hole that's, you know, $50 billion large is not going to happen. And so it needs to be incremental steps, and it needs to be a system by which people can transition over or at least be given a choice of a defined contribution plan if they're not willing to pay more for the benefits that they're getting right now.
Well, what happens if we do a hybrid and you've got some people that choose a DC plan, but some say they want to stay with the DB plan and it's still underfunded? How do we make up the money, or do we make up the money for the people that stay in the DB plan to get them closer to whole?
Well, unfortunately, the way we've seen this situation play out in municipalities and other states has been through ballot referendums. And it's very hard to get any a legislature to actually proactively address this situation, because unfortunately, the media has incorrectly portrayed this issue as an issue of, you know, Republicans that are trying to bash the unions or Republicans that are going after, you know, public sector unions. And really, it's really a battle between people that are on the take, people that are members of the defined benefit plan, and people that are not. And unfortunately, the majority of people at the Capitol, regardless of their political persuasion, are members of the defined benefit plan. And so to ask legislators to actually, you know, there's some exceptions, but by and large, to ask legislators to take a vote on something that might affect their own retirement benefits seems to be too tall an order to ask. And I can tell you that comes from 7 years of banging my head against the wall statewide office trying to enact reforms for this system, and there just has not been any political will to do so, sadly.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see that Michigan, I mean, you're talking about a fairly diverse portfolio of states here. Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Utah have all enacted reforms in the last few years, and Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Florida very recently, where incoming employees will either be defaulted to a DC plan or put into some hybrid plan. automatic. So Pennsylvania, they're in a hybrid DC, 50-50 DC DB plan. Florida and Michigan, they're defaulted into the DC plan. And in Pennsylvania, they gave existing employees the option of transitioning from the DB plan into the DC plan, into the defined contribution plan. So there's if such heavy union states as Michigan and Pennsylvania can do this, and Florida can do this, and Utah, again, very diverse states, it would seem that Colorado should be able to do this.
Josh is a little bit more optimistic than I am, because I've suffered frustration after frustration from changing the board, as he can tell you, to having to sue the pension system for transparency of information. And I know that there's been some progress in other states. I just think the progress has been too long coming and non-existent.
We're going to break. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Freedom begins in your house, not the White House. We Americans enjoy the privileges of a free society, and each of us has a duty and responsibility to keep America's unique ideals of freedom on course. How? Lens of Liberty can help. Lens of Liberty's free freedom kit provides a complete guide to help you be informed, stay vigilant, and fight back for liberty. Order your free freedom kit from lensofliberty.org now. That's lensofliberty.org, so you are armed with the tools necessary to stand for America's ideals.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. And Molly, my computer's frozen up.
Oh, man. You got to call Evan, your IT guy.
I know it. Yeah, they're going to be launching in August.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Evan, your IT guy, they're awesome. They are IT professionals ready to provide on-demand help 24/7. Doesn't matter when and where you are, no matter what the problem, hardware, software, memory, external stuff, emails, you can give them a call and tell them your problem, no matter where you are, and they can help you. And it's a really good program. And then just because cybersecurity has been such a big issue these days, they are giving something away for free if you go to their website and you say the AmeriChicks sent you. So it's a cover for your camera. So if you go to evanyouritguy.com, scroll to the bottom, under Discover, you'll see free webcam cover. Click on that, fill out the contact form, and again, mention the AmeriChicks, and Evan will send you a free webcam cover for your computer.
Yep, definitely. So, hey, this show's gone very quickly. We got off to kind of a rocky start because we were down for just a little bit. So we've got Joshua Scharf, policy analyst with the Independence Institute, in studio with us. We have Walker Stapleton on the line with us. I think you sound like you're scuba diving, Walker.
How's
the water down there?
I'm on the side of the road here.
Okay, great. Hey, this has been really great information. Walker Stapleton is the state treasurer for Colorado. What are your solutions? Give it a couple of minutes. What would you say are the solutions
to the para underfunded liability?
Number one, younger workers in the system are going to have to work longer, up, you know, more in line with the ages that people retire at Social Security. People who want to remain in a defined benefit plan are going to have to either be given the opportunity to pay more in terms of their contributions, employee contributions, which are different than an employer contribution. An employer contribution is a contribution that comes from the budget of a school district. That's a taxpayer-funded contribution that you and I are responsible for. So an employee will need to pay more to remain part of a defined benefit plan, and if they're unwilling to do so, they can be transitioned over to a defined contribution plan and invest for their own retirement security. The state of Colorado should never be in the business of investing for people's retirement security. We don't do a good job of it. We're inclined, unfortunately, to take outsized risk when we miss returns, or at least the pension system is. And that's fine if you're investing, you know, for yourself. It's not so fine if you're investing in a fund that's supposed to be structurally backfilled by the taxpayers of Colorado and by the state of Colorado. And it just doesn't work. And this, you know, I don't think people recognize what a burden this system puts on people's everyday lives in Colorado. This is a liability that is more than $30,000 per taxpayer in Colorado, that every taxpayer is responsible for. It is a a liability that is going to require more than 28% of a teacher's salary and a teacher's contributions by January 1, 2018. Every dollar that comes into the school system for a teacher's salary, approximately 28% of that dollar, 28 cents on that dollar, is going to a bankrupt pension system. It is eating our school district budgets alive. And unless we get a handle on the situation, it's just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. And I know Joshua was talking about other states. During my 7 years in statewide office, the state of Colorado has not enacted one single reform piece of legislation for the pension system. Not one. Nothing. It hasn't changed the board. It hasn't done anything. In fact, all it's done is claim that a piece of legislation passed in 2010 called Senate Bill 1 has solved the public pension problem in Colorado. Well, clearly this listening tour that the pension system is on has led them to, you know, implicitly admit that that is far from the case. And so I want people to roll up their sleeves, recognize that this is a problem, recognize that it is harming future generations of Coloradans, our kids and our grandkids, and the quality of life we want in this state in years to come, and do something about it. Get off their duffs and do something about it.
Okay, so let me just make sure I get this right. Walker Stapleton, state treasurer, thanks again for being on with the AmeriChicks. So we're talking about PARA, and there's a huge unfunded liability that we're facing, and we, the taxpayers, pay for that. And so, Walker, you said, so the suggestions you said is let's give an option. First, number one, you want younger people to work longer, and that makes sense. You want a DC plan option for people so they can contribute their own money. But you also said that the people should also have an option to pay more employee contribution into their DB plan.
Absolutely.
But then you said that the state should not pay for the pension. But if the state doesn't pay for the pension, so do they pay for the rest of their own? Like, we cut it off. There's no more tax funds. It's just people pay into their DB.
Absolutely. Senator Tim Neville ran a piece of legislation that we worked on with him in the treasurer's office just last session. We said no more employer contributions into PARA. We're going to cap employer contributions into PARA, whether it be city government contributions, whether it be school district contributions in our 178 school districts. No more taxpayer money in this system until it fixes itself and is on a path towards solvency, not a path towards bankruptcy.
No additional money, just to be clear. We'll continue to pay the 20 cents on the dollar that we have to pay, 20 cents on a dollar of salary that we have to pay now.
Absolutely.
But no additional, right? Just to clarify for the listener, yeah.
Okay. Yep. Walker Stapleton, thank you so much. State Treasurer, we really appreciate your perspective.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Okay. Joshua, this has gone so quickly. Thank you for being here.
Have you been hearing on the listening tours, and what do you think the solutions are?
Right. So PARA has proposed, at least now, when they were on the listening tour, the report that indicated the 44% probability of going bankrupt for the school fund, and which is 4 in 9, and four chances in 9, and 38% chance of the state fund going bankrupt sometime in the future. That's 3 chances in 8. Would any of y'all take those odds on your retirement? No, of course not. PARA, that report had not come out yet. So what they were doing, what they were talking about, was sort of tweaking, you know, turning dot knobs here and dials there, and, you know, kind of trying to get back to whatever the number that they wanted was. I think ultimately they are going to have to bite the bullet, and like Walker said, they're going to have to raise the retirement age, whether that's for younger employees who are not yet, or newer employees who are not yet vested. PARA vests at 5 years. So if you've been working fewer than 5 years, you're vested in the money you put in, but you're not vested in the benefit that the state has put in. Mm-hmm. So for those workers and for new workers coming in, going to have to raise the retirement age. As Walker said, the average age at retirement, according to PARA's own numbers, for a PARA employee is 58. And most of us are working until 67, probably going to have to work longer than that.
But, you know, Joshua, the life expectancy has continued to be longer and longer. So I think last time I looked, it was like 85 or something for women. So you think about somebody being retired and receiving a defined benefit from the age of 58 to 85.
Well, that's right. And in fact, that's one of the things that caused PARA's numbers to start looking so bad at the end of the year, is they adopted new actuarial tables, which took into account the fact that people were living longer. It had been 5 years since they had updated the actuarial tables, And as a result, when they did that, then of course that increased the obligation because it reflected the reality that people are living longer.
Mm-hmm. Those darned medical advances, ugh, screwing up our actuarial numbers. So
don't ask Dick Lamb for his opinion on this. That's all.
Well,
I
hey, Obamacare might push us all back, and we won't have that long to retire anyway. So what if we just did a quick switch, DB to DC?
So the problem that you run into with that for existing employees, if you did that for existing employees and forced them into a DC plan. Number one, you would never get that past the courts because you're basically taking away a promise that you've made, a contractual obligation. That's a problem if you're not already bankrupt, and there are issues with states. There's no law right now that permits states to declare bankruptcy, so we're sort of on the hook for those promises. But for newer employees and for younger employees, to tell them that they're going to have to go into a DC plan or at least default them into a defined contribution plan is absolutely the way to go. You can argue that, well, then you won't have them paying into the defined benefit plan. So where will the money come from that?
That's the Ponzi scheme component.
But we already have that problem.
Yeah.
I mean, even with all that money
Same
coming
with Social
in,
Security.
We already have that problem.
Yeah, good point, Mal.
So, you're not actually solving the problem with that. But what you are doing is capping it. You're saying, okay, here's the obligation now. Here's the unfunded liability now. By not putting any more people into this system, at least it can't get any bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we still have to figure out how to fund it, but at least can't get any bigger over time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I think is a large part of the puzzle.
Okay. The listening tour, has there been any solutions offered to pay for that amount? And I like it. Say, let's cap it now here. That's it. There's no more liability that we're going to build. This is the number. This is it. Everybody knew is going DC, but how do we pay?
Yeah, so listening tour actually was more of a talking tour. Occasionally, they got a little bit of feedback. But what they started out with was some very basic principles that PERA operates with. Things like the money coming out should be related to the money coming in. It should be, so there shoulds, and people were asked to mm-hmm. agree or disagree with the shoulds. Mm-hmm. It should serve as a recruiting tool. It should provide a dignified retirement for people. So these are all sort of aspirational goals that you have for a pension system. But almost, I'm going to say almost, about when at the two that I attended, 5/6 of the people there were PERA members. So of course, they're going to agree with this. And it makes perfect sense that they would agree with these mm-hmm. with these statements.
Sure.
And by and large, they did. So I'm not sure that a whole lot of useful feedback came out of that. I think it was at least the one that I was at, the two that I were at, served more to allow PERA to propagandize a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that they appeared very unwilling to accept was raising the retirement age, but I think they're going to have to. I think they're going to have to bite mm-hmm. the bullet on that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Congress, who's carved out of Obamacare, voting to keep Obamacare mm-hmm. for the rest of us, but not for them.
Well, Joshua Scharf, thank you so much for being with us. You are an policy analyst with the Independence Institute, and just final thoughts. We've got to have about 30 seconds.
If anybody is up at Larimer County on August 12th, I'll be presenting a longer form of what we've discussed today, a presentation that I have. And then there's also a good shot that I'll be down at the Douglas County Tea Party at some point in the near future.
Okay.
So keep an eye on that. And I do weddings, bar mitzvahs, all the rest of that. So if you if you want me to come to speak to your group about this, please let me know.
Awesome. Thanks.
Joshua Scharf, thank you so much. And so I thought for our quote for today, we go to economist Thomas Sowell, who he's a very wise man. He said, "The first lesson of economics is scarcity. There is never enough of anything to satisfy all those who want it. The first lesson of politics is to disregard the first lesson of economics."
Mm-hmm. if socialists were economists, they wouldn't be socialists. That's the truth. Tomorrow's going to be a really exciting show. We've got a young lady coming in here, and she's 16 years old. She's come up with her own solution to depression and suicide threats today in Colorado and in America. You're not going to want to miss it, so join us. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim signing off. Have a great night. See you tomorrow, 5 p.m.
Thanks.